Humans, we're talking about Squarespace. Have you not gotten a website to show your interest yet? Well, you should. We all have passions. We all have something we want to show off to the world to find like-minded people, if for no other reason, right? Why not do it with Squarespace that got the 24/7 award-winning customer support? It's all easy. Even I can do it. Check out stolenidea.net. Very interesting website. Squarespace.com/improv. Go there now for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code improv to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Welcome to Improv for Humans with Matt Besser. That's me, Danielle Schneider, back in the saddle.
Hi, everybody.
Andy Daly.
What?
And back again without his band this time, Ryan Walsh. Welcome back from Hallelujah the Hills, Boston boy. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you very much.
Were you born in Boston?
Yeah, born and raised, never.
You fucking love Boston.
I guess I do.
Your book's about Boston.
Yes.
Astral Weeks, Secret History of 1968.
It ain't secret anymore.
No. In your opinion, Boston gets short shrift in the Summer of Love histories. It's all about San Francisco and Chicago.
I hear that because I've never once heard Boston brought up in any context terms of that.
I figured it was just cops beating the crap out of hippies.
there was some of that.
There was a little bit of that.
Of course. Well, I think that happens still in Boston. That feels very right.
Now, Ryan, I'm a huge fan of your band. You know that, of all your albums. Giving them to me, but I love your music. When you sent me a book, I'm like, this guy can write books too. Like, how many fucking things does he get to do in life?
I can dance too.
Yeah, like how many things can you be good at?
Usually, you're like, stay in your lane.
Yeah,
you're okay with this.
Oh, yeah.
But honestly, it's Astral Weeks, which is the name of Van Morrison's second album.
Yeah, second solo album,
and. An album I heard in college and liked.
Yeah.
But Van Morrison, I like Van Morrison. He's not my top 40 albums, if I was going to be honest, but he is literally your favorite album, or I think you even say in the top five of yours. Your wife's also.
Well, at the end of our first date with the woman who I would later marry, she put that album on after it meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh.
That is a huge thing.
Yeah.
For some people.
And I don't even love like all of Van Morrison. I like him for a very like 7-year period.
Oh, and he's still cranking them out, by the way.
Three albums in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
What?
Yeah.
Like a lot of them are covers and blues and jazz standards, but he's putting out,
That's interesting. Somebody is paying for him to do that.
Is he self-releasing?
I want to know. I want to know is who's financing the record, the studio time. These are the questions I have. I'm not interested in what songs are on there. I don't need to hear it.
Because no one's buying albums, period.
No.
Right. Anywhere. Yeah. So, I feel like I was talking about Peter Gabriel in the last show putting out this crappy album. But, it's like they have the power to, I guess. So they just do, right, Ryan?
I imagine he's either having a lot of fun or making money or some combo of both.
But you know what? As we say that, I think of every year when you hear the Grammy nominations, it's always some dude from that era putting out an album you've never fucking heard of.
It's always like the Doobie Brothers. You're like, wait, what?
Ringo Starr put out an album like a couple of years ago.
Now, you have a story let's talk about this book in general.
Here. Okay.
So it's not just about Van Morrison, which I thought it was going to be about. It's and his famous record Astral Weeks, which some people say is his best, one of the best rock albums ever. It's about what was happening in Boston during basically 1967 and 68, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I wrote the article about Van being in Boston on the run from the mob right before making this beautiful, quiet album. And that article led to me working with Penguin. And then it was like, well, how, what is the bigger story here? And then I kind of zoomed out and found all these related Boston 68 crazy stories.
But one big story. It's almost, this book is two big stories. So tell us about the other fork in the book.
Right. So the other main figure besides Van Morrison that are like our tour guides is this guy named Mel Lyman, who was a harmonica banjo player. He was he crashed the stage after Dylan went electric and did a 15
that night.
Yeah, he did a harmonica dirge like to mourn the end of folk music. And then within a year of that, he started telling everyone he was God, and he had a commune in Boston and an underground newspaper called Avatar. And things got weirder from there. And, you know, in 68, bands like unknown in Boston, and Lyman is pretty famous. And then they're both kind of like pursuing spirituality through music. And so I thought they were like, they told interesting side.
So let's back up. Stories. So you just said like three fascinating things right there. So this guy, there's like, you ran through like two big stories. Let's start with the first one. So a lot of people may not know about what Bob Dylan did at the... at that festival. Tell us about
that. Was it Monterey Pop? Or where was he?
Newport
Folk Festival.
Yeah.
Right. In 1965, this festival that like barely had, you know, microphones for the performers, Dylan decided, well, you like, you know, this is my new sound. I'm going to bring it. And he just, he's super loud. He plays Maggie's Farm. He's got this great band. And, you know, Pete Seeger apparently, you know, he said, if I had an axe, I'd chop the cables. And just
I think he did a folk set and then took an intermission and then came out in like a velvet suit, like with the whole electric band or something like that.
He starts with the electric band.
Oh, he did.
And then Seeger's like, they're so upset.
Oh.
You need to go out and just do, and I think he does It's All Over Baby Blue.
Oh.
And, but yeah, people were legitimately upset.
Now, why are they so upset?
Funny.
I think the festival was very, it was just steeped in tradition. And like folk music is about one thing, and, you know, it's in opposition to this rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And rock and roll was considered like trivial by the folk purists, you know what I mean?
And so, would Bob Dylan call what he played rock and roll?
He would probably like do some weird evasive answer like, oh, hey man, it's everything. It's like
right.
It's this, it's that. It's
but wasn't it a new sound of sorts?
For him, certainly. I mean, and you know, for someone that with that smart of lyrics to play behind loud distorted guitars, like that was new.
Yeah.
And didn't the Beatles just came over in 1964, right? I think. So prior to that, it was all like super folk music, and then the Beatles suddenly arrived, and then Bob Dylan was like, no, that's what I'm doing now. And the folk people must have felt under threat from the British invasion.
Yeah, definitely some of them. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? And they're like, no, him? Because I remember somebody in the audience yelled, Judas! Right?
That's at a later show.
Oh, that's a later show.
That's different, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, wow.
I thought you were going to say someone in the audience yelled, Jew.
Jew!
He looks around.
Just. That was not the night he went electric that somebody yelled Judas. That was a different night?
No, that's the Royal Albert Hall, I think within a year of that.
Then this Mel Lyman, like after he does that, the way you describe it in the book, like people are like weeping. That made me laugh so hard. People out there crying, oh, folk is over.
Right.
And people are streaming out of the festival like, oh, it's over. Like, why would Bob Dylan playing mean it's over? I don't get that. So Mel Lyman steps up.
Yeah, the scheduled events are done, and he's like, I have to get up and do this eulogy for folk music, and he plays Rock of Ages on the harmonica for upwards of 20 minutes.
And were people walking out, like, what was the reaction to that? Like, I have to save music, and people were like, no thank you. You know what I mean?
Might have made Bob Dylan's case for him. Well, if that's the alternative.
20 minutes of fucking Rock of Ages.
I'm the guy who yelled Judas, and maybe not.
What's this clip here of?
Okay, so let's, not that
is
one.
Is this before or after?
This is a,
which one did you want?
The one we're talking about.
This one. Okay. So this is Lyman talking at the Newport Folk Festival, I think a year before the...
I thought this was at... This was it.
You guys better get together.
I think it was the previous year.
Okay.
If we'd have really been blowing, he couldn't have helped but listen.
Hmm? Like that captain's
he's
hat.
Just run, he's interested in making a film. Well, yeah. He's running the machine.
He's also interested in making a film of what he wants to see in the film.
He's blowing with us anyhow.
Not what we want to be in the film.
Right. We're all playing machines, you know. We're all playing machines. If you really blow on your little machine there, you're playing music too, don't you?
Right, you're playing music on that camera.
If you really swing with that machine there.
Yes, I should cut it. I cut it.
But that's stupid. I told you.
You freeze. I feel like you talked about this in your book this moment. What is this?
This is them at Newport Folk Festival. I do write about it, yeah. It's just one of the few moments you can see this guy talking online.
And what's he talking about there?
He's, he's talking about how the camera is also a musical instrument and a machine.
You really blow on your camera, then you're making music too.
Yeah. Don't you see? I love the don't you see.
Yeah, don't you see?
I'm really educated.
It's elementary.
Yeah.
He looks so young.
Yeah, how old is he? I think he's like 30 or something.
He's 30? He looks like he's 12.
Yeah.
Let's do something on that.
Now, kids, you know, music is in everything. So it's not just the flute.
Yeah, it can be a guitar.
Yeah, it can be a guitar, but it also can be everyday objects. We can
like a drum.
Yeah, but it can also be a fork. It could also be hitting a glass.
A tuning fork?
Sure.
Forks are for eating food.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I am saying is that those everyday objects, those everyday things you can use, anything can be music.
Chopsticks could be drumsticks.
Exactly.
Chopsticks are for eating food.
Chopsticks it is weird. Food. A lot of food eating things could also be instruments. A plate could be a drum.
Yes.
Oh, a plate is for putting food on to eat it, right?
Well, you know, let's go out of things you don't eat.
A drum could be a plate. You could eat spaghetti off of a drum or use drumsticks to eat rice.
Why, though? Why? Because there's already drumsticks and drums, and they could do music, and then plates and chopsticks could do food.
Yeah. What I'm just saying is that we can find music in everything.
And
every
also,
day.
You can find plates and eating utensils in everything. Right, Mom?
Yeah, okay, sweetie. But I guess
if your logic works, mine works too.
Homeschooling is not easy.
Okay.
Okay.
A trampoline is like a giant plate.
Are we supposed to eat off a trampoline now? Because I don't want to eat off the trampoline because all the kids that go on and take their shoes off, it's just like eating feet.
Kevin, I don't
want to. A hot tub is a giant soup bowl. This is fun, Mom.
Look, your father wanted me to homeschool you, and this is not something that I wanted to do.
How'd it go today, sweetheart?
Well, sweetie. Mm-hmm. The music class took a turn in a way that I just didn't foresee.
Oh, yeah. What do you mean?
Well, I wanted...
Are they really blowing on some wild new stuff? Are they swinging? Are they swinging down there? You got them swinging?
I thought I would get to. I wanted to show them how we were going to make actually like box harmonicas.
Because I want to hear some music that's
this
really go, man, go.
This hockey stick is like a knife if there is a big sandwich. Mom?
What's happening?
It's sort of gone off the rails. It's just that instead of me showing them how they could make musical instruments and how we could do sort of like our own little band here at the house because, you know, we can't afford real instruments because of your new job.
Dad's car is like a cheese grater.
Why is Tyler rubbing cheese on my car?
I don't know. That's where the music lesson has gone. I just don't think I'm fit to teach our kids.
Listen. My new job of drawing pornographic art on the back of road signs is something that it will eventually pay off.
It's just not a job. I wish you would stop calling it that.
Let's talk some more about that.
Yeah, so Mel Lyman, he had this cult going. And what was the name of his band? He's part of
this band right here is the Jim Queskin Jug Band.
So that's why does that make you laugh?
I don't know because I was as he was getting ready to say it, I was like, I'll bet you I will have heard of this band.
But you know what's funny? It was a huge band at the time, right?
The Jim Queskin what?
Jug band.
I've never heard.
They were on the Tonight Show.
Really? Wow. The only jug band I've heard of is the Emmett Otter jug band.
but as Ryan talks about, there was a fad for like a couple years in music of people using things like jugs to make music or
really.
What else? But like, yeah. But so
like
jug band,
washboard,
right? Yeah. So that was a whole kind of Americana sub fad or something, right?
Yeah, it was like pre-Depression music, and then some kids in the late 50s when the folk revival happened.
Yeah.
Some kids were like, they latched onto the jug genre.
I get that. Yeah. I get that because I feel like that happens today where, like, you know, people try and take things that, like, when we didn't have instruments, we couldn't afford them. It was the Depression. People were starving. Of course, we are making instruments out of, you know, whatever we can scrounge together. And I feel like now people do that with, like, their wardrobe. It's like, yeah, you know, a burlap sack or a crazy beard. It's like we don't need to keep ourselves warm anymore with those sort of things. But
yeah.
We have choices now.
Cut to the jug center. That's pretty good. Can I get some help?
Yeah, man, what's up? Pretty good jug, right?
Yeah, it's really, really nice, man.
Yeah. That one is, there's just a particular guy in Japan who makes those jugs, and he's been doing, he's a national treasure over there. And
These are handmade?
These are handmade.
It's got really nice tone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. It's you don't know how to play it, so it's
excuse me.
Well, you don't know how to play it, so it's a little hard to. It's a little hard for me to hear somebody.
Using one of those. Sign says try them out.
I know, absolutely, and you are well within your rights to do it. I'm just telling you, as a guy that knows jugs, and as a guy who has a real regard and respect for this particular jug.
Are you a jugger, or are you just an aficionado,
brother? Am I a jugger? Yeah.
Ooh, that's a nice one.
Yeah, I'm a jugger. Check out this jug.
Wow, do you guys sell that?
I had this made for me by an actual tugboat captain.
Oh.
This guy is a working tugboat captain.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Now, this is a working man's
jug. Are they better at making jugs?
Well, he's a real man with a real job. Oh, he's out there working. And so, yeah, you better believe it's better.
Can I record this?
Sure. Yeah, you can record it.
Okay, let me check this
Nathan,
out.
Nathan, I'm sorry. We have a man looking at the washboards, and I'm looking for the washboard from the woman in Turkey who washed her son's clothing on the, you know, the washed and dried the clothing of her already dead children.
Mm-hmm. Every one of those washboards is guaranteed to have had at least 50 items of dead child clothing washed and dried
and
on.
And where do I find those again?
Those are hanging over there.
Okay, great.
Beside the laundry.
Okay, great.
Yeah, some people, you can't play jug, play a washboard. You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The washboard guy in every band is the fucking idiot.
Oh, it's really sad, yeah. The washboard guy is always the guy who happens to also have the van. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, dude. Oh, shit. Backwards. Oh, I didn't know you could use that part of the jug.
Yeah, not a lot of people do know that. But
you were like,
that's how we played. Yeah.
Like, I didn't even thought about putting my lips on a jug like that. Like, it's not intuitive.
Well, and I would not try it. I would not try it with you unless you've spent at least a year up atop the mountain over there in Yosemite. There's a guy who can teach you.
Oh, some old hillbilly guru.
Yeah, there's an old guru up there. He used to hang with Kerouac, and he's still up there atop that peak in Yosemite, and he'll teach you how to blow a jug, man.
It's almost like you're talking me out of buying jugs here, because I'm not going to be able to make that
trip. I don't think you should buy a jug.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't. I don't, because
it's kind of insulting, man. I'm kind of a natural. I mean, I know this jug ain't as good as yours, but...
No. I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
What? I was thinking about buying this.
No, I will not allow you to buy it. You are not allowed to buy a jug.
Do you own Jug Center?
No, I don't own Jug Center at all.
I want to talk to your manager.
I work here one day a week, and I'm hanging on by a thread.
You motherfucker. Excuse me, I'd like to talk to a manager.
Hi.
Hi. You're the manager at Jug Center?
Of Jug Center, yes.
Okay. I come in here all the time for jug grips, washboard rags.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And today I was going to buy a brand new jug I've been saving up for.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's talking. He's saying my skill isn't the level of the jugs you buy.
He was handling. He was handling a Takani. Okay.
The sign says try it out. I don't know.
Yeah, and we encourage you to try out. Doesn't mean you'll be able to play it, but we encourage you to to try it out. Of course.
Okay. So I found this guy rude.
Okay, Nathan, can I talk to you?
Of course.
I'm going to jam on the Jihani.
Takani.
Nathan, I know.
You know we're going to have to destroy that jug.
Nathan, this has gotten...
He's warping it. He's warping it right now.
Nathan, I am a businesswoman. First, and foremost. And yes. I opened Jug Center because, you know, this artisan sort of...
And you know what? That particular resonance is warping all of the jugs in the entire store.
Nathan, we're going
to have to let you go. Your entire inventory is going to have to be burned.
Nathan, we're going to have to let you go.
Oh, when you stick a tongue in it, it gets a different pitch.
He's sticking his tongue in the Takani. That's what's happening right now.
That's okay.
What do you mean, let me go? I don't want to go.
Well, you have to. I mean, we're not going to pay you anymore.
That's okay. I'll still come here because I believe in jugs.
So he did get fired and even banned. But true to his word, he would sneak in to the place to insult people jamming. We cut to a week later. Oh, this one's cool. Oh, nice hollow sound there.
You just destroyed.
Excuse me?
You just destroyed jugging. You just single-handedly brought an end to jugging.
Hey, man, I'm just trying it out.
No, you're not just trying it out.
Hey, let go.
No, I won't let go.
Let go of it, man.
This man is a Judas. He destroyed jugging.
You destroyed the Takani.
Let's talk some more about that.
So, Ryan, let's go ahead. There's so many different funny stories in this one. Another one I enjoyed. So at some point, what was it, MGM? Some record company's like,
oh, yeah.
Let's just make up a marketing campaign. Let's just call it the Boston Sound, right?
Oh, right.
Because like San Francisco has their whole thing. Why can't we?
Yeah.
But there really wasn't a Boston Sound.
There was this instance was just like, you know, when you think of the cliche of a greedy record executive just scheming, basically they were like, we just pick a different spot on the map, find a bunch of bands, call it a thing, and just cash the checks.
And they didn't sound alike.
No, they
picked, or there wasn't anything distinctive about it.
They picked three green bands who didn't know each other. And then took out a full-page ad in Billboard, Centerfold, that said, you know, introducing the Boston Sound, the sound heard around the world.
What?
And then the bands, when they read that ad, they didn't even know the other bands, and that's how they learned the name of their album title, too. So, and then it snowballed where, like, people told me there were guys on street corners like, hey, kid, you in a band? Like, people...
But why not go to the bands that were there?
I mean,
there must have been some veteran bands that were decent. No,
there were two like that had a lot of promise, but they had recently broken up.
So right,
it was like, and Peter Wolf, future singer of the Jay Giles band,
right.
He had a band called the Hallucinations, and he was wise enough.
It's a little on the nose
for that time, yeah.
But he was like one of the few holdouts,
it is, isn't it?
So Jay Giles wasn't the lead singer of the Jay Giles band.
I know, shocking, right?
Yep. Interesting.
There was no Jay Giles, is that right?
He was the guitarist.
He was the guitarist.
Yeah.
Was he that good? That deserved?
I think he started the band.
I was going to say earlier about I always forget his name, but the name of the band, Jug Band.
The Jim Kweskin Jug Band.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't start the cult. It's funny that usually the lead singer's the spokesperson, the charismatic guy, but
but I sort of it makes sense to me because usually the lead singer is more personable and out there. The cult guy has to kind of like find his angle. You know what I mean? So that would be sort of a minor player in the band or someone like not even a minor player, but like they have to kind of use their intelligence and their wiles as
and
opposed
Jim
to.
Bought into it. He quit the band because he was so into what his harmonica player was talking about. He saw him do an interview. He's like, that was so inspiring. I no longer want to have the band. I want to start this cult. Band that was doing well.
Yeah, and that's a night show.
Playing with the Doors and Janis Joplin. And for the last like 6 months of the band, they would often not start performing. They would just talk to the audience, like confront them if they're ready to really hear music. And then it would just be like these fights instead of concerts. And then finally.
That sounds like ASCAT, our intro.
No, there was something about it reminiscent, Matt.
It sounds like Besser versus the audience, folks, you listen to on Stitcher. Yeah, when I read that part, I'm like, I like this guy. Especially a bunch of, you know, me coming from not the 60s, but the punk that hated the hippies. It was that kind of aesthetic of like, fuck you. You don't deserve my music.
Right.
Prove yourself. Let's do something on that.
Thanks for taking me to the show tonight, sweetie. I'm really excited. We so rarely go out.
I know.
Are you ready to rock?
Yeah. Woo.
I said, are you ready to rock?
Okay, guys. That wasn't really that much louder.
Okay.
And also, I didn't say, are you ready to clap?
Oh.
It was a question. And I'm just going to pass the mic around just to where it'll reach, especially in the front here. And try not to answer just by clapping, because that's not how we communicate. Like you, your waitress doesn't come to the table and go, are you ready to eat? And go, woo, you order. Okay? Everybody get it?
Oh, I think he wants us to do requests. He wants us to request someone.
Okay, we'll start really this mad? Couple right up front here.
Yeah.
Hi. Are you guys ready? I've already said hi.
Okay.
Okay.
You guys not here when I came out?
No, we were here.
Okay, are you ready to rock?
Yeah. I mean, we say, yeah, we're totally ready. I mean, we never get to go out. We got a sitter tonight, which is very unusual.
Yeah, we haven't been out. You know,
yeah, because our
okay,
kids,
I'm sorry. Are you both answering at the same time, or is...
Oh, we don't have to.
Because I assume we're all individuals are going to have our own answers.
Oh, well...
You want to go first?
Oh,
you go first.
Sure, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so I'm not even going to count anything you said already. Uh-huh. Are you ready to rock?
Oh, I sure am. this is fun.
Let me just say something to everyone. Mm-hmm. When I come around to you, you can't just say yes or I sure am or something in the affirmative. I want like a why. Why are you ready to rock? Okay?
Oh.
And we will get to everyone.
Okay, well, I guess I'm...
No going to the bathroom.
Okay.
All right, you're first.
I guess
are you ready to rock? Why?
I am ready to rock, and I guess it's nice to have a nice out. And, you know, We had a baby recently, and it's been tougher than expected. And
okay, and, doesn't seem like you're answering the question. Maybe we should just take a step back.
I don't want to be. I don't want to get in trouble. It's just there's a lot of people here tonight, and if you're going to interview everybody, are we going to get to some?
Does music have any meaning anymore, or is
it
just some bullshit thing we dance to? I still do music that has meaning, so
great.
I want to know that everyone's ready to rock. Let's just half step backwards. What is rock? And I'll go
rock.
Since you couldn't answer your question,
I thought I was doing a really good job.
No, you started really talking about babies.
Well, the baby is really colicky, and that's the problem. She just has this acid reflux.
Yeah,
it's a real issue.
Don't see what that has to do with getting ready to rock or rocking.
Well, what is rock? It's
okay. Here we go.
It's you know, there's a backbeat, right? And it's
God.
It came
how
about
many
in the
musics 50s out there have backbeats besides rock?
What I mean is, it was invented.
That's not just rock.
A combination of what? Of
was
it country music?
And yeah.
But okay, once again, you're helping each other. Do you want to try what is rock?
I don't know
rock?
What rock is, but you know it when you hear it.
God, I'm so nervous. I'm so goddamn nervous. I'll try. It is sound and percussion and harmony and...
Okay. I'm just going to get to my next question. Because you guys are way flipped out. Unfortunately, you are in the front, so you'll have to start on the next question, too. But are you guys ready to have a good time?
Yeah, we really are. We are.
Why?
Oh.
Well, start with you. Why?
Well,
why are you ready to have a good time?
It's been a difficult 3 months.
Okay, if you're going to go back to that other answer, that's more a break and relief, not of a good time,
good time
or relaxing.
But that is why. Because I enjoy fun.
I'm ready to remember my youth.
Sure, you're yes.
Good tunes that I remember from when I was younger and happier.
Oh,
and...
not my tunes?
No, other people's tunes? No.
I got to play covers? I guess you want to hear Freebird, huh?
Oh, I mean, that
would be... Yeah, Freebird! Kick that guy out!
Oh, God, what are they doing? They're dragging him out.
Everyone around that guy, too.
What?
To bet their friends.
Oh.
They just butted that guy with the end of a rifle.
Oh, God.
I'm so scared.
Please, sir, we don't want any trouble. We'll do whatever you say. Please, just don't hurt us.
Okay. I'm sorry. I will take requests. I'm going to take it from you guys right here in the front, because I did give you a hard time, and the fact that you bought the tickets up front means you're fans of mine. So I'm going to give this couple in front the first request. I'll play any of my songs that they like. Any one of them, off any album.
Well,
our
daughter goes to sleep every night to
oh, God.
The sound of your cover. Your cover of
my cover. You know how let me just slow down here. You know how insulting is when you get one request and the person requests a cover?
Well, might I suggest
it's like your favorite song of mine that someone else wrote.
But you put it on the album, so it's not really our.
You put it on the album.
It's like you get one Beatles song and you request Twist and Shout. Well, would you do that?
I would. I think that's my favorite one.
Twist and Shout is their best.
Humans, let's be human. Robots would never make a website for themselves. But humans, we do, because we have emotions, we have passions, we have interests. Robots just do what they're told. We have dreams. Let's make our dreams reality on Squarespace. It's easy too. Maddie B can do it. Go to stolenidea.net. If I can make that simple but cool website, any one of you idiots, I mean humans, can do it. Go to squarespace.com/improv for a free trial. And if you do, make your website, send it to me, and I'll check it out and we'll talk about it. That's a free ad for you, isn't it? Squarespace.com/improv, offer code improv today.
Let's talk some more about that.
I want to talk about one of those bands from the Boston sound. One was called Ultimate Spinach, which is this lamest name ever. I never would have listened to that band. But I want to talk about Orpheus.
All right.
Let's get a taste of Orpheus, Ryan.
The precursors of soft rock. Here we go.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah.
This is so soft. Let's get to the middle. Let's hear some singing.
Yeah. So many people say that I couldn't tell a lie, couldn't tell a lie in a thousand days.
This is so barely rock. It's so jazzy and mellow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the kind of song that if you're watching a movie and they did a flashback into the 70s of a 13-year-old girl discovering, or a boy discovering love, and a girl walks in slow motion, this is the song that would be playing.
I want to see the characters running through tall grass when I hear this song.
This part right here, the la la la, I feel like I've heard this in a million different songs. But there's a story. Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, just that, you know, I wasn't familiar with the song, but then when I was researching it, I sang like a bit of it to my parents, and they both finished the chorus.
No. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like a regional hit.
Oh,
interesting.
So it was the Boston sound.
I know, yeah. They were from around there. So,
this was their hit, and the story I love from the book is one member of the band, he's on vacation. Where is he? He's in another part of the country.
Okay, so a friend of theirs went to San Francisco and brought home like an underground newspaper and said, look, there's an ad for an Orpheus playing in San Fran, same font as the album. And he's like, are you guys playing there? And he was like, no, this is very strange. Uh-huh. So they waited till the date of the show.
Right.
And they called up the club and they said, can I talk to someone from Orpheus? And this guy
got on the call from Boston.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And what they understood eventually was that the record company had created several fake Orpheuses.
Oh my God.
To tour the country, to play. All they had to do was learn this one hit, and then they could do anything they want. And one of the fake Orpheuses featured Chevy Chase on drums.
Oh my God.
How crazy
that
is that?
That is insane.
Wow.
Didn't they do that with the Zombies too?
Yes.
There was a fake great, Zombies that toured.
And that featured future members of ZZ Top.
That is the ballsiest thing in the world.
That is, but before the internet, anything was possible.
Right. This was,
you could cheat and lie about anything. It was so great.
Right.
But even the Orpheus didn't know. Like,
right.
The way you tell in the book, the guys in Orpheus had just assumed this band had broken up, I guess. What did they think?
They just started to suspect but could never get a full I grasp about how many fake versions of their band there were floating around the country.
And then they would have real fans that were a little more savvy out in the audience of some shows going, "You're fucking imposters. This is an Orpheus." Because they only knew the one song.
Right. And then Chevy Chase would get combative. He was like, "We are Orpheus."
Really? Yeah. He would argue with them.
That tracks.
Yeah, that definitely tracks.
Is insane.
That's crazy, but I love it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Let's do some on that.
What would that be like?
What's the problem? We are U2, and we just played, you just heard us, we played Sunday Bloody Sunday, and then...
Right, that's the only... That's the only.
Well, that's
song.
The new direction of the band. We're playing that one because people want to hear that one, and then from there on, it's all sort of, you know, it's more.
Yeah, we play lots of other songs.
A lot of freeform jazz, yeah. And whatnot, and that's just kind of how we're.
Even Sunday Bloody Sunday, you went through every week, every day of the
yeah.
week to
well, there's
Monday
lots of,
Bloody Monday.
There's, you know, right, there's right. lots of bloody days.
That's right.
But that's not the way you two... You're not Bon Iver.
Today's
no, I am him.
Bloody Tuesday.
That's right, The Edge.
Yeah.
The Edge isn't a woman either.
The Edge
UT.
Isn't any... The Edge is The Edge. I don't consider myself a woman or a man. I'm an edge.
That's what The Edge keeps...
Yeah, the real Edge is kind of like that too, I guess.
That's what The Edge has underneath that knit hat. So all of her hair, as you see yeah. here, she's been a woman all along,
yeah.
The Edge.
Yeah.
You guys are imposters.
No, that's
you can't
not true.
Name one other U2 song but Sunday Bloody Sunday. Did nothing off of Joshua Tree.
Well, you know.
Yeah, we did. We did. We did a yeah. bunch of songs off.
We
of,
did the titular song Joshua Tree.
That's
oh,
right.
Yeah, that one. I'm cut. You guys mean I'm cutting down the Joshua
yeah.
tree?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm cutting down
Remember?
The Joshua tree.
She said
I'm
that.
I'm cutting
yeah.
down the Joshua tree. On Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. Every other song you did always somehow linked back to Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
Just
yeah.
to make the point that we really are you too. This is yeah. a big moment for you, getting to meet one of the biggest bands that's ever been
I'm
in the world.
The Edge.
And you're, all you want to do is argue with us about whether we are who we are. Say we are who we are. Not yeah. say we are, but are.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to be honest. If it had been you two and they'd found some way to seg every one of their songs back to... You know, whatever they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to rattle and hum on Sunday, Bloody Sunday. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we played all the hits.
All the hits. We played also One Love.
That's right.
She's yeah, for, how's she, your One Love go?
Well, she said that right in the middle of like an 8-minute long exploration
yeah.
of sound.
One Love.
But it sounded more like... It went into more of like a Rent kind of song.
You mean?
From the soundtrack of Rent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we met.
Yeah, One Love. Yeah, One Love. 125,600 One Loves. 1,025,000 One Loves a year.
If what you're saying is you're rejecting U2's new direction in live shows, that's your right. But don't go telling us who we are, who we aren't. Yeah.
Don't go tell me that I'm not the Ed Rosenblatt.
We cut to this U2 later on the road, and they're in their motel room watching TV, and they see the real U2 getting inducted into the Hall of Fame on television.
Hey, Bono.
What? The Edge.
Did you see this on your TV?
I was just watching it.
Right?
I was just watching it now. Did you see it as well?
Yeah. Another random.
I don't remember that day at all. I don't remember going.
Me
I don't remember being invited.
Especially because it's right now. It's right now happening. So how could we be there and be here?
Well, this has happened once or twice before, hasn't it?
We had once or twice.
Well,
but
we were on tour in Tucson and we heard that they were in Ireland.
Yeah.
And, we thought,
and our manager said, no, this is just the space-time continuum.
You know what
and
it is? There's a fucking imposter U2 out there. That's what it is.
Like
so
it.
They started doing research and got a private investigator to help them. And we see them in the back files of the library with... What are those things called?
The
card catalog?
The
microfiche?
Microfiche,
yeah, yeah. Scrolling through microfiche.
And the private investigator sees that even before U2, there was something called U1. And the deeper he looks, there's all sorts of, there's U1, U2, U3. And just because they're all over the country, they've never connected. And he presents this evidence to this band.
I don't even know what to say.
This is shocking.
Yeah, it goes all the way up to U15.
There's a U15 out there.
Is there U15? That they're in Brazil?
Yeah, that's the Brazilian one.
How much money would you estimate we have had robbed from us? The earnings of all these other U bands.
Or what about U1 that came before us, the original U?
Yeah,
you haven't addressed that. What did we take from them?
What did we take from U1?
No.
This goes way back. He shows them an old photo, and they notice that it's their parents as the original Bumblefoot.
Mom? Mom and Dad?
Mom and Dad were the original U1. Wait a minute. It's fucking U0. U-1.
U-1.
It goes back forever.
Goes way back. Look, this is in the 18th century.
And they go all the way back to U-2000 BC.
It's on the cave. Look, and even before that. Oh, my gosh.
This has been around forever.
And they see these cave wall paintings of this very bloody scene. This it shows the 7 days of the week, and then there's blood on the wall on the last day of the week, and these primitive tribes dancing around. And we go back to a recording that they found of this.
What? Sunday, blood,
Sunday,
525,600 madness.
Let's talk some more about that.
Rock had to start somewhere, right, Ryan?
That's right.
You always point backwards.
Appreciate
someone
you
before.
Sorting that out.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Happy to trace the history. It was like going to Epcot and the history of music.
So a lot of this that was going on was attached to the whole LSD experiments going on, right?
Right.
This whole era, really.
Oh yeah.
This one story I really enjoy, and also this is we began all this Ryan's Pride in Boston, but that's where that all started too. It all started at Harvard. All the acid
is that where
experiments.
Dr. Timothy Leary was?
Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, fully sanctioned by Harvard to start giving psilocybin pills to just graduate students.
Oh yeah. No,
do not give them to the undergrads. Yeah.
What was the original purpose of it? Was it
They were just so blown. 10 years prior to that, a Boston hospital just ordered LSD from Swiss chemists because they were told it could mimic schizophrenia. And if you had a pill that mimicked schizophrenia, maybe they could learn how to treat it.
Was that the original intention of the Swiss people that made it?
Well, it was synthesized accidentally by Albert Hoffman, but then people thought it did. Everyone had an opinion on what this is for. Like, is it going to help us solve schizophrenia too? It's going to make music sound really great.
Which, honestly, it does. I hear. So there you go.
Yeah, those people were right.
And so this one woman who was their assistant to those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Alpert and Leary. This cracked me up. Her name was Bieberman.
Lisa Bieberman.
And she had a no-nonsense approach that now seems ripe for parody. She made these films, an educational film called LSD, You Are Not a Bird. published a chart that asked, how high are you? What did You Are Not a Bird?
So
what would that film be?
Leary and Alpert, everything they wrote about it started to get like drenched in Eastern mysticism. And she was like, we need like, you know, something you would get in a doctor's office for people who are going to take this. So hers were just very direct. Like, how high are you chart was like number of milligrams of LSD you took and what time it is. And the chart's like,
yeah.
And and she had she created a hotline. She was worried that, you know, when you're sometimes at the peak of LSD experience, mm-hmm. you know, you think you're dying, or you think it'll never end. And she wanted there to be someone besides your parents to call. Yeah. And she had a hotline. You could just ring her up, and she would talk you out of a jam.
But could you call a phone when you're that high? Like, can you use a phone and, like, know a hotline number? That
Hello, this is How High Are You Hotline. Can I help you?
Yeah, I got to figure out how high I am, because I feel like I might be all the way high.
Okay, sir, just calm down. That's what I'm here for.
Shit.
You say all the way high?
Yeah.
There is no all the way. Don't let that blow your mind.
There's no maximum. It could keep going.
But that could also be a good thing.
I don't know, man. Let's try
to turn this around. I always start out with, what are you holding in your hand right now?
Right now, I was holding a mouse, but now it's a can of juice.
Okay.
But it was a mouse, man. It was a mouse when I grabbed it out of the fridge.
Okay. It's a telephone, because you're.
Oh, shit.
That's a telephone.
You're not in a can of juice?
No. Okay, so we already know you're past five, sir.
Okay.
All right, on our scale here.
Five, what is five?
I know, especially if there is no top of the scale.
Oh,
don't let that blow your mind. Okay, so I want you to tell me.
Yeah.
In the last half hour, what's been the most interesting thing in your purvey?
Well, the room I'm in right now has a floor. Mm-hmm. So that's been fucking blowing my mind.
Okay. You're fascinated by obvious truths. That means you're above an eight.
So no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I can stand on it, and you can put things on it, and it's the whole room. It's from side to side of the room.
Okay, slow down, sir. You're just loving the concept of floors more than like a pattern on the floor or the way the floor is made.
I can't even think about the pattern.
Okay, you're into a 12 right now.
But I don't know what's under it, and that's what's really freaking me out, because something has to be.
All right, sir, now you're worrying about the unknown.
Yeah.
That's a whole other level of paranoia and ennui and possibly nihilism. Sorry, I got to get... just hold on, sir. Just hold on to that mouse tight.
Okay, man, in the can of juice.
How high are you, hotline?
I'm really freaking out.
Okay, don't freak out.
I'm dying. So, like,
okay.
I feel like every time I close my eyes, I can feel my chest up. Stop breathing. And so, like, every time I wake myself up.
What are you holding in your hand?
Okay, I'm holding my own life in my hands.
Okay, you're speaking in the abstract. It's a phone, but okay.
Oh, God. So I'm not speaking into my own abyss?
This is not your subconsciousness or your secret friend or your past or future you. It's none of your perfect you.
Okay.
Or your dark you.
Oh,
I hope I'm not thinking of possibilities that you haven't considered.
No, I didn't even know there was a dark you. What is my dark you? Why am I? What's my
we
dark
won't
you?
Get into him, and we don't need to address him right now. They usually
it's
are.
A man.
They usually are. Just hold on, ma'am. Just hold that abyss in your hand. Hello?
Yes, hello. I've taken 28 tabs of acid.
Oh, no.
I don't feel any effect at this time, and... Just wondering what that's about. So far, everything seems as
oh, you
it
think you're
has.
Calling to complain about not getting high?
Yes, that's right. Isn't this the number to call? Are you
okay,
a LSD customer service?
Kind of.
There's 28 times.
This could go two ways. This could be that you got some bum acid, some bullshit, as we call it.
Yes.
Or you are way off the charts high.
How would I know if that were the case?
Well. What are you holding in your hand right now up to your ear?
Well, I should mention I am calling from the planet Venus.
How'd you get up there or down there?
I dreamed myself here. I thought it, and then I levitated, and I didn't stop until I arrived at Venus. And I am holding a beautiful Venetian woman and a can of juice.
Are you communicating with me through the juice?
Through the woman.
Oh, okay. Now,
she is also a telephonic device.
This all seems great. Why are you calling to complain?
Because
it sounds like a perfect acid trip.
No, I'm saying that there hasn't been any effect on me whatsoever from this acid. This is a typical day.
He hangs up, and he's really mad that it wasn't a helpful phone call. He bitches to his Venetian woman.
Man, that didn't do anything for me at all. I thought I'd call that number and get some answers.
I'm so sorry that you did not get...
That's all right.
What you wanted out of it. Would you like to use me to call again someplace?
No, that's all right.
We cut to the phone store. Sir, your phone isn't working, but it's...
No, she isn't.
You would like to return me.
Let's talk some more about that.
Venusian women are also telephonic
devices. I thought she was Venetian.
Oh. No.
That's how women on Venus sound.
Sure, I bought it.
Yeah. I was like, well, she's Venetian, but she's on Venice. I mean, on Venus.
Remember that sketch, that Saturday Night Live sketch where Jimmy Carter takes a call from the guy tripping on acid? Like, the joke of the sketch was that Jimmy Carter is such a micromanager, but he's taking phone calls from people asking very specific questions, and somebody tells him, and it's funny because they have the specific kind of acid that he dropped. And Jimmy Carter's like, you're a living organism on this planet. Like, he talks them down from tribute. It sounds like exactly that hotline.
I had someone email me. He is a professor at Northwestern, I believe. Is that true, Dalton?
I'm looking at it right now.
And let's call him right now, Ryan. Can we do that?
Yep.
Are we calling him or is he calling us?
I'm calling him.
Okay, excellent.
All right, ready?
Let's get his name, though, quickly.
Adam Waits.
And he's a real life professor at Northwestern.
I think so.
Management and organizations at Northwestern.
What's his?
Get on the mic here, Dalton.
He's an associate professor of management and organizations at Northwestern.
Okay.
Sweet.
Is he on the line yet?
Not yet. Here we go.
Adam
Waits.
Hello?
Professor Waits.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, this is Matt Besser. How are you doing?
Wow, amazing. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for calling.
You're here with Andy Daly, Danielle
Hello.
Schneider.
Hi.
And writer-musician Ryan Walsh. You're in an episode of Improv for Humans. So you wrote me an email. You're doing a intellectuals call it? A paper on robots and humans?
Yeah.
A paper?
I'm writing a book. I'm a psychologist who happens to study how humans think about machines, and a lot of the book is about the future of humanity in the face of automation.
Which is perfect, because this is Improv for Humans. That's probably how you got attracted to the show. You're like...
Yes.
And my co-host is a robot, even intros the show. So what a perfect show to ask this question. So tell us why you came to me and what the question is, and I'll have my fellow improvisers help me out here.
So everyone's worried about robots taking jobs, and economists and social scientists and psychologists have started to think about, well, what are the skills that make jobs robot-proof? And it turns out one of the major skills that makes a job robot-proof is non-routine work. So anything that doesn't follow a script, anything where there's some variability, non-routine action is what humans tend to be better at than robots. And so that made me think about improvisation is sort of the skill that evidently robots are less and less capable of. But I thought it would be pertinent to ask you, two-part question, could a robot ever be good at improv, the type of improv you do? Why or why not? And, you know, is there anything particularly humanizing about improvisation, or is it just another skill?
Humanizing, interesting. You guys want to start?
I feel like a couple of robots could be programmed to do a decent improv scene. I don't know that we'd laugh at it, but I think it might hang together. You know what I'm saying? If you can teach a robot to play chess, I think you could teach a robot to find the game.
Well, improv without comedy is just a slice of life, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not saying it would be a good show, but I think you could program
a robot, it seems to me, to take a suggestion and be inspired by that suggestion to be in a location and to make a choice, and then another robot to respond to that choice and to together find the game of the scene.
But the game of the scene is an unusual thing, so... do they know how to recognize it and play with it and have fun with it?
Well, I will say that there used to be an improv show called Robot TV.
Oh, yes. Okay. helpful.
You got to research this, Adam.
You got to research this. And it was chaos. But I did find myself laughing because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. So I
you were laughing at the robots, not with them, though.
Wait a minute. What was the premise? Was you were humans portraying robots doing improv?
I wasn't in the show.
Okay, I know. But wasn't that the premise?
The premise, no, that they were robots doing improv.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. The premise was robots were doing improv.
So I found myself laughing.
So this question has been fully contemplated. 15 years ago.
Yeah. By one Matt Wall. Right? Uh-huh. So I feel like it's been done.
20 years ago. So I would respond that I agree with Andy that two robots could not be funny, I don't think. But I think you could have one robot be a straight man and have a funny person improvise with that robot, and it'd be a funny scene.
Yeah.
Because if they're just being grounded.
Yeah, but now you got me thinking that, like, what would be a way for a robot to be funny? Like, he would have to kind of use his robotness. Like, the joke would have to be how kind of limited.
They would get pattern, though. Uh-huh. And pattern sometimes, like rule of threes, is intrinsically funny, right? And a robot would get that. And a pattern and heightening, I feel like a robot could learn that.
I don't know. I'm not buying that they see the funny part, though.
But they see pattern.
And could they be taught certain aspects of delivery and performance that we might find enjoyable?
I think so. Like if you
you're more imagining like a stereotypical robot going like this.
Take and my we're all there wife, like,
that would be
please.
Funny. Yeah, I think that would be funny to kind of, you know, use what you got, you know.
They but would the, only
but
be
the
like
professor is imagining a world where robots are indistinguishable from humans, I imagine.
Well, then in that world, of course they'll replace us and we won't be able to stop it, and they will take our jobs, and they will take our lives.
But they can't find the funny, I still don't think. You say patterns, but patterns...
But if there are no more humans around because they've taken over, then it will be funny to them what's funny to robots, and that's different than what's funny to humans. So then they would be...
Oh, man. I just had this vision of myself improvising in a scene against a robot.
Against.
Well, meaning...
The battle for the future will be done in improv, and whoever wins the improv competition wins the Earth.
I just had this vision of myself feeling really slow in comparison to this robot, not being able to keep up with his choices.
Yeah. You really got us thinking, Professor.
Okay, Professor, you had a follow-up question, right, to that?
Yeah. Well, so the follow-up question, I don't have any experience with improv, but you know, this is a bit of a serious question, but don't take it so seriously. The folks who I know who do improv, I'm in Chicago, so like everyone does improv, they talk about how it really involves core humanizing behaviors like eye contact and touch and these things that have kind of gone away from our
We've tried to cut
lives.
Out the touch in the last couple of years.
I was going to say.
I would
hope that people don't touch each other in improv.
And is that deliberate or is that just, you know, part of the scene? Or like the idea that everyone brings something to the table. You kind of have to recognize everyone's humanity. And is that kind of a overly intellectual view of the craft or you know, what's your take?
Well, now you sound like a robot. The humanity. I think...
This is a robot!
Is
touch essential to humanity?
There's a bunch of robots standing around him right now taking notes. I say it's not.
Get them to touch each other.
I'm not sure I understand the word humanizing, maybe. Humanizing, to make human...
Well, so like in our daily lives, when I'm at work, I don't necessarily consider my I consider people instrumental. Like, oh, I go to this person to get this form signed. I'm a professor, so, you know, I have to teach students, impart some wisdom into them. You know, I've collaborators on research papers. This person is good at statistics. You know, this sounds like I'm a bad person, but oftentimes, you know, our relationships are based on some instrumentality. What can I get out of this person? Rather, you know, who is this person? What do they bring to the table? What's their inner life like? What are their wants and needs and feelings and desires, things like that.
Okay. Not just,
you know, yeah.
Again, don't you think when you're improvising, you're experiencing one another's inner lives very indirectly, because you're playing characters and people's own ideas and experiences will come up, but not in a really like we're getting to know each other kind of way. Exactly. But yeah, it's two people building something together out of their ideas. That's different than more transactional kind of work.
Yeah. That's helpful.
But is that humanizing? Yeah. Maybe.
I mean, the fact
it's all human. It's all human.
Yeah,
behavior.
I mean, experiences and what you bring to improv anyway are just like, that's human. It's life. You bring your life experience to improv. So yes.
Here's a question: do you, in order to enjoy art, all art, do you need to have some sense of right and wrong? In other words, like an improv scene is happening and some character is behaving inappropriately, and I can't enjoy that unless I understand appropriate versus inappropriate and have some sense of like what is appropriate behavior in order to laugh at this character who's being inappropriate.
Yeah. Like, do you know that you're not supposed to eat boiled dog?
Right. Somebody with no empathy, no sense of right and wrong, might just sit there at an improv show and just with their arms folded and go, no, I think that guy's got a point.
But they but they could understand the rhythm of comedy and maybe
we cut to a green room after an improv show, and we see it's made up of mostly humans and one robot. Okay, guys, I just want to give you some... I want to give you some quick notes here, and I don't want to pick on you, robot.
That is fine. I don't mind being picked on. You can pick on me all you want. You literally cannot hurt my feelings, because I can voluntarily set them aside in order to more efficiently learn.
Okay, right. It's just that...
I'll just say it.
Go ahead.
Please. I prefer directness.
Okay. Like, and like, I know you won't take this personally, so I can say what I want. Because when I'm talking to Craig or when I'm talking to anybody else, I have to kind of say it nicely. But to you, I can just say it, which is great.
As long as it's good to have some warning. I have disabled my feelings.
Okay. So I just want you to be I just don't feel like you're following where the scenes are going. And I think you're not paying attention. And I also just don't think you're dynamic on stage.
What do you mean by dynamic?
You don't have presence.
That is objectively wrong.
Now you're getting defensive, and so I know you turn off your feelings, but I find you to be really defensive right now.
No, I'm responding with facts. I have extraordinary stage presence. It has been programmed into me. I am captivating.
Stage presence isn't pushing everyone out of the middle of the stage like you're doing today. And also, when you do tag outs, you shout eliminate.
Yes, I have to eliminate someone from the scene in order to step
into
the scene.
I guess that's technically true, but shouting out eliminate, it makes it look aggressive and scary to a lot of humans, actually.
Yeah. I'm not responsible for your inappropriate fear reaction.
Again, you're getting a little defensive.
I tell you what, I know. Let's just do a quick exercise, a short form exercise, changing emotion.
Changing emotion.
That's what I think you need to work on the most, is emotion, if I may. And I know you said it, you have emotion programming.
Yes, I do. I have flawless emotion programming.
Well,
state of the art.
Seem a little braggy for it, because I think it might be. Well, let's just.
I am turning my feelings back on.
Do you remember how that short form works?
Yeah. Oh, when you change emotions, when you're like, okay, now this scene is, let's do it. Everyone is sad.
Right. Okay. Mm. So I'm gonna. You guys are at a farmer's market. And you're selling meatballs,
yeah.
And you're up at the meatball tent, okay?
So you want us to do a transaction scene?
You know each other because you buy there every week. I don't like that attitude from you, Cynthia. I never get that from the robot. Let me say.
I am more than happy to perform a transaction scene.
Yeah. Monty Python delighted. Made a lot of funny transaction oh, yes, scenes, by the way.
But you were just
the
saying.
The dead parrot scene, that's a transaction scene, everybody. Just think about it.
I am more than happy to, if instructed, do a transaction scene that begins with a question.
Okay, go.
Okay.
Welcome to my stand at the farmer's market where I sell meatballs, which are made from ground beef, also ground pork. They are seasoned with several different seasonings, including pepper and garlic.
I'm going to interject. I love your specifics. You guys could work on your specifics like the robot here. He's really good at details.
But like no one would say that. No one would ever say that.
You could work on your details.
My details are great. You haven't even heard them yet. I haven't even gotten into them.
Keep going. Go.
Okay.
These meatballs are cooked in a homemade sauce.
Hey, Glenn. I haven't seen you in a while. You haven't been to the farmer's market. Have you not been feeling well? I came by to your booth last week and you weren't here.
I have been feeling poorly, and it has prevented me from coming to the farmer's market to sell my meatballs.
Okay, I'm going to put in emotion fear. Fear. Continue the scene with the emotion fear.
I experience fear that you have felt betrayed by my lack of attendance at the farmer's market.
Oh, Glenn, I'm just worried for your health. You don't look well.
You're behaving irrationally.
Happiness.
I am happy that you have come by and you look like you're ready to buy some of my meatballs. I make my living by selling these meatballs here at the farmer's market, and therefore it will make me happy for you to buy some, which I think you will do.
I mean, this is not the way people talk. You always say, if I can interrupt, like that we should talk like we're real people in the real world, and he's not doing anything like that.
Okay. Why are you referring to me in the third person here at the farmer's market at the meatball
stand?
The
scene is over, Glenn.
Actually, I never stopped the scene, so it wasn't. But Cynthia, let's continue the scene.
No one has said end scene yet.
End
Who are you?
Scene, right. End scene.
Thank you. Now the scene is done.
Okay. Now, can you show him what happiness is like? Let's start the scene up again.
Hi, Glenn. I'm so excited to see you. It's so good that you're feeling better.
Thank you. Yes, I am happy that you are excited to see me.
You always say it's like show, don't tell, but he's just telling everything.
You said I'm excited.
Yes.
You did.
But I showed it with emotion. I feel attacked right
Cynthia,
now.
Cynthia, I'm working on you now. You don't have to say, I'm excited if you're happy. You're literally just saying the emotion. So let's try it again.
But he says literally all the ingredients of the meatballs, and you didn't care about that.
I would just like to throw out there that I know three other robots who are looking for an improv team right now. And they're great guys. And it would be really fun to bring them in. I'm just saying.
Humans, you're already a fan of Paul Scheer, host of How Did This Get Made? Well, he has a new show with Amy Nicholson from The Canon, and it's called Unspooled. The way I understand it, they're going to watch every one of the AFI 100 list. You know, the classics, Taxi Driver, Graduate, all those good movies. And they're interesting, funny people, so listen to it. Unspooled on Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen.
Man on the Street interview.
And Dalton, I know you have some interviews you did on the street. Can you set those up for us?
They're not technically street interviews. I actually stumbled into this guy I met at a party, and I told him a little bit about the show, and he was so excited to share stories that he had that I said, okay, let's go for it. And most of the stories he had were about getting in fights. There were probably 4 or 5 of those. This was the one that was not about getting in a fight.
Okay. And is this at the party that this is being recorded?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you just stepped out of a party to record this?
Yes.
This is my 8th grade graduation in Wilmette Junior High in Chicago, Illinois. So we all had to wear giant blue gowns that practically went down to our ankles for graduation.
I had proposed an idea to my parents that I thought that they would yell at me about.
Mm-hmm.
And they were completely fucking cool about it.
What was the idea?
Well, here it is. The day of graduation, everybody was supposed to arrive. I arrived on time.
Mm-hmm.
I had the top of my gown clothes pinned.
Cool.
Because I didn't want anybody to see what was at the top of my neck.
Okay.
My teacher kept asking, Matt, what are you wearing? Because she saw all of our students and all my classmates in their nice clothes.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, Matt, what are you wearing? I'm like, I don't want to unbutton it. My mom knitted me a sweater that I do not want to show anybody. I am so embarrassed.
Okay.
And from the gown down, everybody was wearing dress shoes and, like, dress pants. I was wearing skate shoes, and you can see my bare legs. Something was up. My teacher was partially fucking freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
We walk up to graduation. Morgan walks right in front of me. As they say her name, they call out mine. I walk up on stage.
Right.
I rip open my gown, and I'm wearing a full-body Superman costume.
Nice.
This is in eighth grade. I've never seen more flashes in my fucking life.
More what?
All the parents and everything taking pictures.
Yeah.
It was one of the greatest fucking moments ever.
That's awesome.
After the graduation, I just walk on out. Everybody's giving me a high five. It's fucking awesome. That's when I hit, like, prior to going to this school, I moved 10 different times and went to 10 different schools.
Uh-huh.
And this was the first school I met my very best friend, Jack. This is like
when anything Jack to do with Black. The Superman costume.
When this is when everything started, like getting the guts to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Were you at a party with like a bunch of hobos on a train?
Where are you guys walking to?
Yeah. How old is this person?
What were you walking from burying?
He's about my age, a couple years older, I think.
Really?
He's lived some that time.
Oh. What were you? You're walking on some dirt, sounded like.
Yeah, we were just outside.
All right. Wild. That guy built some suspense.
I didn't know what was going to
happen. And that's just the first part.
Oh, gosh.
What do you mean that's just the first part?
I had to split it into two.
Was that compelling?
Of that same story?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's hear the second part.
Right after the graduation, I gave my high fives to everybody and then walked off and took a little breather near a tree.
Nice. What kind of tree?
I couldn't tell you. It was a nice tree. It was at the end of graduation.
Yeah, why is he supposed
Chicago
to remember the tree, dog?
That was the best tree I ever seen. And then all of a sudden, the first year principal at that school came up to me and grabbed me out by the arm. He goes, "What do you think you're doing, ruining my graduation?" My Sicilian mother sees that from across the parking lot. All of a sudden yells, "Get your fucking hands off my son right now."
Ooh.
Everybody looks, "Dude, let's go." And he goes, my mom walks up to him. She's like, "What are you doing grabbing my son?" The principal goes, "Your son ruined my graduation." I go, "This is our graduation. You've been the principal here for 1 year. This is your 1 year mark. This is our graduation.
Our graduation.
Not yours.
Not his."
Essentially, my mom and him talk. He's like, "He has to do community service." My mom was like, "How long?" He's like, 50 hours. My mom was like, "No, he'll only do one."
Oh, 1 hour.
We got it down to 5 hours.
That's
easiest
nice.
Thing I ever did in my life. Nice. I just chilled out with the janitors that I knew from the high school.
5 hours.
Played some basketball.
That's a great time, man.
Don, you sound a little high.
Yeah. seems not.
But let's get back to the tree, man. What kind of?
Yeah, that's a question I don't know that I could ever answer unless it, what kind of tree you're actually in Joshua tree, and then you're like, I assume it's a Joshua tree.
He was pulling out so many details, I was just kind of seeing.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah.
I was just at your book reading, and that's amazing that you worked with Martin Luther King for all those years.
Yeah, it was, you know, just some of the most important times of my life.
And you were there that day he gave that speech.
Yeah, I mean, I was there on the mall listening to him speak, and he changed America with that speech. He changed the country, he changed the world, and it's...
Yeah, it was the mall that interests me.
Yeah.
How big was the mall?
I'm sorry?
How big was the mall?
Footage? I'm not sure. I mean, you could go online and find out the exact
measurements. I've tried.
Well, it should be there.
And what color was the brick?
It was not the monument, which is white. I don't understand why this is. Do you have a?
It was white brick, right?
Well, I think it's white marble and.
I want to write this down.
What is this about?
Do you know what kind of marble?
No, I don't. I worked closely with Dr. King in, you know, and on sort of his speeches and
blah blah blah, Dr. King. But what kind of marble? Like, is it from America? Because a lot of marble gets imported.
I assume it's maybe Italian.
I thought so. I love this story. You should have mentioned that. Do you guys ever do revisions when you do another version of the book, like another print of it?
Some people do, but I don't think that is important to the people that will be reading this book.
I do. Think it is. I think that's the interesting part of the story.
You don't think it was what Dr. King did for civil rights and for
everyone,
the oppressed?
Everyone's talked about that. That's
because
like that's
what's
kind
important.
Of the boring part. Well, it's kind of the obvious part.
Excuse me, you're hogging up the author's time. Can I jump in here, please?
Go ahead.
Some questions.
Sorry.
Can I get my book autographed first and foremost?
Sure,
thank you very
to.
Much. I have a question for you.
Sure.
What was the sound equipment used in the 1963 speech at the Lincoln Memorial? What kind of a microphone was it?
I don't know. I wasn't in.
Was
charge.
It a Takani?
You mean the best, the people who make the best?
That's what I want to know. And I want to know the amplification and to, what kind of amplifiers were used and whether those were provided and who provided them.
Excuse me, don't hog the stage. I love your book and your speech.
Thank
You're such
you.
A wonderful
I'm happy to
human.
Sign your book. I'm happy to sign your book.
Oh, thank you. Also, I have a book, I have it on audio.
You have my book on, you mean
yeah,
your book
the
on
audio
tape?
Book.
Yes.
So can you say your name? Into this, can I record your name? It's a common audio signature.
You can have us sign your ears.
Yeah, exactly.
What? Yeah, I'm happy to.
Called audio signatures.
Just
say your name.
Okay, sure. My name is Larissa Jones.
Okay, that's cool. Anyway, what temperature was it that day?
I honestly don't remember.
Really?
It was not too cold. It was kind of. Not too cold, sort of mild to...
58? Who made the Reverend socks? Who made the Reverend socks?
I don't know. Does anyone have books?
Were they thick socks because of the temperature?
I assume they were of normal quality. Does anyone have a question about the book?
I have a question about the speech itself.
Oh, yes, please.
How many words exactly were in the speech?
Well, you know, you can count them. You can go online and count them, but that
not
is not what
expert,
I wrote in my
then
book.
I'll write my own book.
My book was about what it was like to be there that day and to witness history in the making and the ripple effect that it had in the civil rights movement. It has nothing to do with what socks he wore or who sat next to him or what they were
saying. Who sat next to him? What were they wearing?
What
temperature was that
I don't
person?
Know what the,
were they
the
touching
temperature.
The marble?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were touching the marble. Everyone on. The monument was touching the marble of the monument.
This is an appropriate, thank you, Dalton, a segue into the next bit I want to play here, another story from this book. A member of the cult you were talking about, Mel Lyman's cult,
the
Fort Collins Hill cult.
The Fort Hill community.
Sorry.
Hill community.
Fort Collins. Fort Hill community. And it's still around, right?
Yeah. They
Well, some of them live out here. Some of them live back in Boston where I am. And they one of the ways they make money is a construction company called Fort Hill Community, Fort Hill Construction, which is they do high-end work on like Spielberg and Geffen's house.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And like the guy who created MASH, there was a quote from him. He's like, excellent work. Very nice people, but you know, they were working on something for me and they looked up in the sky and they said, did you just see that fleet of spaceships fly by? So I would get worried about them sometimes.
But then they did great plaster work. Everyone says that,
they do good work.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a long running cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long story. It's like,
So back in the early days of this cult, you know, there was this actor, or he got, you set it up.
Oh, okay. All right. So Mark, you know, they were trying to like take over media through a newspaper and then a TV show and like just trying like, how can we get more attention? And Antonioni, famous director, wanted to make a movie in America about America. And they were looking all over the country for this lead role, like an angry young male.
The next James Dean.
Exactly, yeah. And then they held auditions in Boston. Nobody's interesting. And the MGM people are in a limo driving through Boston, and they see this kid in a fight at a bus stop, like screaming at someone, and someone throws a potted plant from out a window. And the story is the producer grabbed the kid out of the fight and said, how old are you? And he's like, I'm 22. He threw him in the limo and he says, he's 22 and he hates. and he got cast in a major movie called Zabriskie Point.
Oh, I know Zabriskie Point. Pink Floyd did the soundtrack for Zabriskie Point.
Exactly right. Yeah.
How do you know that movie?
I mean, it's a famous movie.
I was a big Pink Floyd fan and I rented that movie and it's incomprehensible. It's like a lot of sex in the desert. But there's some good songs. That soundtrack is great.
It's a great soundtrack. Yeah.
That has this, does that have this song, Green is the Color? That's a great song.
That's a Pink Floyd song?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw clips.
Oh, no, that's for more.
I saw clips of the movie, and it's just the worst acting. The two leads are both really good-looking, I guess, for that era, and but both terrible actors. But the very interesting thing is they went on the Dick Cavett show when they're promoting this movie, I guess, right?
Right, so they send them out on the promo tour, but by that time, they've fallen in love, so now she's part of the cult as well. Mm-hmm. And so, and they also hate the movie. So,
they hate the movie.
Yeah.
They love the cult, and now they're on the Dick Cavett show promoting it.
Here we go.
With,
oh yes, this is great.
Is there somebody else from Dick Cavett's panel still hanging out for the interview? Oh, good.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to say Orson Welles.
No. Yeah, pretty good though. This one.
No kidding. Yeah, you're full of amazing things.
I'm alert. I wonder if you know my next guest.
Mel Brooks.
I bet I do.
I bet you don't. They're the two young stars of the controversial flick, as they say in the trades, Zabriskie Point. They didn't know each other until they made this film, and presumably do now. They live with a number of other people in a commune outside Boston. And I have never talked to anyone who lived in a commune. Will you welcome, please, Daria Halperin and Mark Frechette.
I love it.
Mr. Brooks, Mr. Reed, do you know one another? I feel at a loss, and it's a terrible thing to have to do, but I won't see Zabriskie Point until next week. But I will see it then, and I assume we can be friends without my having seen Zabriskie Point.
Sure.
Yeah.
Probably more opportunity now than after.
More now than ever?
Yeah.
What, you were both not actors.
That was a jam.
Yep.
I mean, you were not experienced actors, either one of you.
That's true.
Yeah. And this happens all the time, and people wonder how it comes about. Where did they find you, for example, Mark?
On a bus stop.
On a bus stop?
Waiting for a bus.
Yeah. There's more to the story, right?
No, that's about it. I was on a bus stop. There was, you can't get into much when you're waiting for a bus, you know? You're there and you're waiting.
No. Not a fight, for example?
There was a verbal argument.
Oh, I had been clued in that you were in a fight with someone and you were discovered fighting.
Just a verbal thing.
Oh, verbal. Yeah. Not actually striking one another.
No, I see. He was on the third floor of an apartment building, so it was all I could do to shout, you know?
Oh, yeah. Difficult to fight with a man in the third floor apartment building. Would you agree, Mr. Brooks?
Yes, it's you got to yell
loud. You have to, the invective has to carry.
Yeah. Right.
Did you win?
Well, I got the job and he didn't. I don't know who won the fight.
That's winning.
How do you like the way the film came out? Don't all talk at once.
There are parts of it I like quite a bit. Yeah. You know, but I can't even talk to you about it because you haven't seen it.
Mm. Oh, so you can talk to me even more freely about it because I have no prejudices.
Oh, well.
I haven't seen it also. I'm not, my mind
isn't
closed.
Well, then save your
money. Isn't closed on it. Save my money?
Sure.
You're not recommending your own film?
I'm not.
That's certainly a relief on a show, isn't it? To have someone come on and non-plug their film?
No, I don't want to non-plug it. I just say there's a lot in it that that I was disappointed in.
And, his first movie.
There's a lot that was attempted that wasn't achieved.
Are you interested in making film from doing this, from this experience? I mean, would you want to direct a film yourself, for example?
Not right away, no. I don't want anybody on my back about things like that.
Yeah. Okay, Daria, talk. Time is going. Say something. Just say hello. Hiya, Dick.
Thank you.
Say talk. Say hiya, Dick.
You have nothing to say yet.
You're going to kill him. You're going to wound him. Don't be afraid of anything.
Oh, boy.
He's 5'3". You'll see
totally
when he stands
awkward.
Up.
Nothing
to
do. Yes.
Yeah, that's why I've never seen standing. They have someone else do the monologue. That's actually a devil. Right, where did you come from? I don't say the wings. I mean, you obviously...
San Francisco.
Oh,
man.
Anyone else have a question? Rex.
Well, I'm very curious about what
who's
it's
this
like
guy?
Rex Reed?
Because he is certainly as controversial as any of his films.
This may not be the time to find out, but I would be interested.
Well, I mean, I don't know any actors who have worked with him before, and I just wonder, is he, because I've read a lot of things, and in fact, I did an interview with him once in which he said he despises actors, and he has no use for them at all, and actors are like cattle. You walk them through a fence, he said. And did you feel that?
The interview where that came out in?
I think that's come out in several interviews, but I wrote one. But I'm just curious, is he good with actors or not? Did you feel that you were helped?
It depends on your personal relationship with him, if you have one with him. And this is a hard part, because he's a very distant man, you know. He stays pretty withdrawn.
I felt very close to him personally, but it didn't come through in the film.
I felt very different from him, really separated from him through most of the film. I think that also came through.
Did you ever get sore at him?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What were the circumstances?
I don't even remember, but we got pretty sore a couple times.
And how would this get resolved? Did he win?
You're not in it to win. You're in it to get something going. I mean, I was desperate, you know? Working with a guy with his reputation and with what he knows about cinema, I wanted to learn something. Yeah. But he wasn't teaching, so I got mad.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I know what I wanted to ask you about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
God.
I did that to relieve him. You were on a show, and as I get it, and I can't get the story straight, I hear a different story from several different people, and I didn't see the show. You got in sort of an argument with some of the other guests, and then the argument continued after the show. Do you know the incident I'm referring to?
Vaguely, yeah.
Could you tell it even vaguely?
Well, what exactly do you want to know?
Oh, nothing. I just thought I'd bring it
up. Okay, that's enough.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Those were the days before pre-interviews, I guess. Right?
But they knew the stories that he wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Yep.
And then a few years later, he robbed a bank.
That guy.
That's right. It's a fascinating story.
And what happened to her?
Yeah.
She... runs a dance school in San Francisco.
Oh, okay. Still. Well,
yeah.
Look at that.
She made it out of the of the relationship.
She
did say she was from San Francisco. Yeah.
She's got that that look of like, I don't know, she's been drugged or hypnotized. Yeah.
it's just real weird. Both of them are in another zone.
Yeah.
And that sort of soft-spoken thing they used to do.
And we're back from commercial, and I'm here with a couple that I teased in the last segment who saved a whole family from a car accident in the middle of a hurricane. That Hurricane Harvey just last week, and we have him here on the show to tell us about this amazing, heroic story. Welcome to the. You've probably never been on television, Tisdale's, huh?
That's right.
I can't remember ever being on TV before.
Okay, that's great. So let's just hop right into the story. So set the scene. It was the day of the hurricane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it was really raining. And we just did, you know, we did what we felt like we should do.
Yeah, it was raining.
Right, all hurricanes have rain, but I'm asking you to set up the big accident yourself. So everyone in your segment of town has been told to evacuate, and a lot of people were still on the road during the evacuation. Right?
No, not everybody.
No, I think there were a lot of people that weren't on the road at that point.
Right, I said a lot. That means not everybody.
No, I don't think everybody was told to evacuate. Maybe they were.
Okay, let's say they were. There were people on the road trying to get out of town, whether they're told to or not, and you guys were on the road too?
I don't remember.
I was saying I wanted to go to shelter, so we were going to shelter.
Okay. But let's get to the car wreck. Can you tell me what happened, what you saw? From what I read, there's... The station wagon in front of you was lifted up into the air and spun around. Then what happened?
Well, in a car wreck, one car or two cars end up getting wrecked.
Okay, but this car was lifted into the air, right?
As far as I know. I mean, that's what a car wreck is, isn't it? If a car's getting wrecked, you know, car's going to get wrecked.
Are you angry about something?
No.
Have I offended you?
No, I'm just, you know, you're on your trip. You know, you're doing your thing. You're on your trip, and I'm on my trip. I'm not on your trip. I'm just not on your trip.
Okay.
So, you know.
I don't want to tell the story for you, but the car in front of you lifted up in the air and then landed on top of your car while you were driving. That's pretty crazy.
Yes. You say so.
The car did do that. Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
Yeah, it just kind of happened, you know.
Then you invited us on your show.
No. You're skipping the part of how you saved the family. The car was on top of your car.
If you already know it,
crawled outside your window.
I guess you already know the story.
Well, I don't want to tell a story, but you crawled outside your window. You crawled into the car above you in the middle of the hurricane.
Oh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just a misunderstanding. We just got out of there, and so did they. And I don't remember it that way.
Do you remember it? That's why you're on the show.
Well, we'll say something when we remember it. When we remember, we'll say it.
Okay.
I was told Mel Brooks was going to be here.
Humans, you got to buy this book. It's very fascinating. It's a fun, fun read. I now am more of a fan. I went and bought Astral Weeks. It is an amazing album.
Nice.
And it has songs on it. Like, everybody knows Moon Dancing, Brown Eyed Girl, and Domino, but none of those songs are on here. Moon Dancing was supposed to be on. It got kicked to the next album, which I found was funny. But you hear these songs, you're like, oh, yeah, I do know Madame George. Oh, yeah, I do know Astral. There's like... four songs on it you recognize.
Yeah.
And the whole thing's really awesome. But this book's not just about that. It's about this crazy cult and just the whole scene happening in Boston during that time. It's very interesting. So buy Astral Weeks. Where can we go to find out where you're on book tour?
Oh, astralweeks.net has all the book stuff. HollywoodTheHills.com has all the music stuff.
Yeah, we never got to your song today.
Oh, that's all right.
But that,
totally it, fine.
We got into the book so much. It's such a great read. Danielle, Bitch Sesh, what do you got to plug for that?
Bitch Sesh, we have a live show April 26th at the Largo. Special guest Caitlin Olson from It's Always Sunny and Mick. It's so that should be really fun. And yeah, just
Chicago.
Bitch sesh. Yeah, and we'll be at the Chicago Onion Fest June 1st. I think our 8 o'clock show was sold out, but I believe there's some tickets for 10 o'clock. So yeah, bitch sesh. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Andy, I was on your Andy Daly pilot project. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. That was super fun.
You did the Travel Bug sequel.
Yep.
Live at Largo.
Live, yeah. That, I forget when that drops, but I don't know when this is on either, so what difference does it make? But check that out. Right now, it's going to be on Stitcher through September, all 8 episodes of Season 2 of the Andy Daly podcast pilot project. And then after that, it's going to be on Earwolf in September.
Oh?
Yeah.
There you go.
Promo code Andy. Eh?
Keep being human.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. 8 nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You want to see my collection of men corpses and one woman?
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.